Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first ever episode of Building It Up with Bertelsmann. I'm your host, Ankur Variku, the co-founder and CEO of Nearby.com, and this is India's first podcast specifically focused on the problem of scaling up your business. In the 10 years that I've been an entrepreneur, I think one thing that's really helped me is the network of entrepreneurs I've surrounded myself with. These are people who have already been through the problems of scaling up, have gone through the journey of building their startups from 10 to 100, and I can tell you with conviction, they have solved most of the questions that we ask ourselves every day. So while there are a lot of podcasts around which are focused on starting up or the personal stories of these entrepreneurs and the inspiration behind it, I felt that Building It Up is India's first attempt to pick up scaling as a meaningful problem to look at and help find the answers to the questions we ask ourselves. The first season of Building It Up will have an episode featured every 15 days where I'll be sitting face to face with the world's finest entrepreneurs and people from the startup community. And if you're an entrepreneur or someone who's in the middle of scaling up their business, you cannot afford not to subscribe. So go ahead and do that right now as we enter the first episode of this season. Joining me today for the first episode is Pankaj Makkar. Pankaj is the Managing Director of Bertelsmann India Investments and the man behind the idea of Building It Up. He's been an investor since 2003, is a graduate from Delhi University, a chartered accountant, and has an MBA from the Harvard Business School. But what sets Pankaj apart is that he's one of those few investors in the country that's solely focused on scaling up and has seen the Indian ecosystem grow itself to where it is today. We're going to be spending time today in understanding what the idea behind Building It Up was, and of course, his views on what sets up the India context different from everywhere else. Thank you so much, Pankaj, for being on this first ever show of Building It Up. I want to start with this question of what was the idea of creating a podcast which is focused not on starting up, not on the 1 to 10 story, but instead the 10 to 100 story?
First of all, good to be here. This is a topic that we've been thinking about for a fairly long time. Yeah. When we started our business in 2013, we thought that there were a lot of investors and entrepreneurs who were talking about starting a company and a lot of literature that was around that topic. Mm-hmm. There were very few people who were talking about taking a company from, let's say, you are a leader in a city and now kind of growing it to a pan-India level, taking it from a $10 million revenue to a $1 billion business and so on, and what goes around building all of that.
Yeah.
Bertelsmann as a group, we feel that that is something that we do fairly well. Mm-hmm. This topic kind of resonated very well with us, and that's how we kind of ended up doing Series B, Series C investments in the country.
Got it. And you actually think that the challenges and the nuances of a 10 to 100 journey are different from the 0
they
to 1?
They are so different, especially because the DNA in building the company from 10 to 100 is exactly opposite from doing 0 to 10.
Tell me about that.
So if you look at 0 to 10, yeah. Most of the founders would have teams that they would be comfortable with. They would have gotten that team either through network search. Yeah. They would know those people and so on.
Yeah.
And essentially, it would be a journey of building product market fit.
Yeah.
And some revenues.
Yeah.
This is something that most of the tech entrepreneurs know fairly well.
Yeah.
But now taking it further and starting to think about warehouses, logistics, marketing, branding, those are topics which a lot of the tech entrepreneurs are not very deep into.
Yeah.
And that is something that they do struggle with.
Got it.
And we feel that in order to kind of build a company in which is a much larger company from just a small product company, you need to have a very different DNA. And that is a struggle that most entrepreneurs go through.
Yeah.
And we feel that that is something that we don't talk about a lot.
Yeah.
We talk about very early stage or big successes,
yeah.
but the entire journey in between, we don't talk about a lot, which is why we thought we should talk about this topic and building it up with Bertelsmann, and hence this podcast.
Right. And this journey, I would believe, is not a 2 to 3 year journey.
No, like it is not.
This will have, like, what do you, if you were to give advice of this 10 to 100 journey, what is the ballpark one should sign up for?
I think this journey can easily be it can start with a 2 year journey, but it can be a 10 year journey.
Wow.
I mean, look at all the companies, including the most celebrated companies, including Flipkart, etc.
Yeah.
I would say the first 2-3 years were probably 0 going to 10.
Yeah.
But after that, the next 7 years that they had till today were probably the growth story. Now, Flipkart is not by any means over.
Yeah.
I mean, Walmart is investing in this to make it from probably 20 billion to go to 50, 60 billion.
Exactly.
And that's a different growth altogether.
True.
We
yeah.
want to cover the first 3 to 5 years of growth once you have product market fit established.
Got it. Okay. And is there one thing in particular that sets this journey apart from the zero to one. So you did speak about the fact that the problems are very different and the tech entrepreneurs are not necessarily geared up for that.
Yeah.
But in your opinion, is there one surprising element that you find necessary for 10 to 100 journeys that not spoken about?
Yes, I feel that now that your startup is much well known in the ecosystem, the failure rate has to be much lower in terms of the experiments that you run. If earlier you didn't have product market fit, you can take 1 year, probably another 2 years figuring it out.
Sure.
Now that you have already established the company in one city, the new investor who's coming in, the users who are using that product don't want you to pivot and now start giving them a different service altogether. So your the amount of mistakes you can make will be very few, which means the kind of success rate, the kind of strategy that you may have to employ, you have to clearly think about it and think about these and launch them and make sure you're a success. And I feel that a lot of the entrepreneurs and the companies are not geared up for that type of execution at a scale that we're talking about in terms of growing it from one city to probably 20 city and so on. And that too, making very few mistakes.
Yeah. It's a very different mindset altogether, because what you're talking about is someone who's held the business very close to their chest all these whiles, perhaps haven't even delegated, like to do things on their own, getting hands dirty. And now it's almost like you have to take on a CEO role while being the founder as well.
Absolutely. We see that with the startups that come to us. We the first thing we ask them is, okay, you've been a very hands-on guy. Can you be a hands-off guy?
Yeah.
And they're like, what? You don't want us to be the CEO anymore or the founder anymore? You want us to hire five CXOs who, I mean, this is my baby. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, this is your baby, but you have to be in 20 cities. You physically cannot be in 20 cities.
Yeah.
So this will not happen.
And
you need an army of other people around you to build this business up.
Yeah. So it's, I would argue, a fascinating time to be part of the Indian startup ecosystem. It's very early days, and yet we are seeing some mega success already. Recently, we had news of the biggest e-commerce exits and so on. There are more startups, close to about 5,700 or 6,000 odd at the end of 2017 in India, more so. People are starting up every single day.
Right.
And yet there is this conflict that hopefully will get resolved over time, that should one focus on growth? Should one focus on profitability? How do you really think about it, particularly when you're scaling up? I'd love to get your views on that.
Yeah, no, happy to talk about that. Look, the first view I would kind of share would be that it's not essentially the same recipe for success for each and every company.
True.
There are certain companies that would spend a lot of money, build a user traction, and then go into the profitability mode. Some other businesses would suit themselves to become profitable relatively early.
Okay.
So I think depending on whether you are in a business which, let's say, it's a winner-take-all, you need to kind of have geographical presence across the country and then start thinking about monetizing, you may want to kind of go down the path of raising a lot more money and then therefore becoming profitable over time. However, there are a lot of other businesses which should focus on profitability on day one because it is not a winner-take-all market. And we have seen that globally as well. Look at various businesses that are coming in the brand space, etc. They're thinking about profitability from day one because it's not a winner-take-all market. There are multiple brands that will exist in the market, and therefore you need to have your unit economics figured out from day one. And I think as Series B investors that Bertelsmann is, we think of this aspect when we look at making some of these investments. We go and talk to entrepreneurs and figure out whether their DNA is right in terms of thinking about profitability or not. There is no fixed pitch book of from that perspective. It depends on business model to business model.
Got it. So while it's fancy nowadays to say I'm losing money, and that seems to be a reflection of growth, what I hear you saying, and I so agree with that, is the businesses which are a winner's take all, and there the market share and the speed of, or the pace at which you capture that market, is of utmost importance.
Right.
And maybe that comes at the expense of money, and should someone be willing to support, then why not? And there are some businesses that by definition should be not thought of a winner's take all, and should be then looking at profitability.
You know, in fact, there's a third category as well. There are businesses which should not even take VC money. You know, there are businesses which are great lifestyle businesses. You get 10-15% EBITDA margin, you take a little bit of debt, you build a business, you take it to $30-40 million and sell it to a strategic good thereafter.
Yeah.
there are a lot of different recipes for success. Yeah. There's not just one recipe. And I think what we are seeing as a ecosystem of entrepreneurs, we are seeing entrepreneurs come and challenge the notion of saying, I want to raise $1 billion of capital. I want to create a $3 billion company. That is perhaps not the only way to do entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And I know that this hurts my business as a venture capitalist. Yeah. People don't come to me and take money. But I still want to kind of say the right thing. That's the right thing to do.
And it's such an honest admission, because as an entrepreneur, at least, I so strongly believe in that fact that you don't have to raise money if you don't need that money. And there are, in your opinion, that lifestyle businesses that can happily get to $10, $20, $30 million, and that's big enough. Thank you for stating it, because I think that's a reality check that goes through. I want to focus on the India market story. So when I look at someone like you, what I see is you've been an investor in the US. You today are managing the investment arm of a very large multinational, and yet you're focused on the India market with its uniqueness. So no one better than someone like you to tell us, what is it that you found unique about Indian startups or the startup ecosystem in general, especially when you compare it with the two usual suspects, US and China?
Sure.
Your experiences around that?
Yeah, so when we came into India in 2011 and started Bertelsmann India Investments in 2013, we thought that the ecosystem was fairly nascent. If I look at today, 2018, we feel we're probably in the phase two of the startup ecosystem.
Okay.
Phase one was there was a lot of wide gaps. People would come and say, this is a wide gap. We want to build a business over here. It could be a large business and so on. Phase two for us is a place where entrepreneurs come and talk about businesses that they want to build, yet they challenge the big boys who have already built large businesses.
Interesting.
That is a second theme that we're seeing kind of emerge a lot. In that case, trying to build a Uber for X and Uber for Y does not work, because the Uber already exists.
Yes.
What do you do then, right? Yeah. And then you have to kind of think about fairly interesting ideas and innovations and disruptions to really disrupt the incumbent who's out there. And those type of businesses we would do very well. These are the kind of entrepreneurs that we want to back and we are seeing. The third phase of entrepreneurship, which we are starting to kind of see a little bit, are real on-the-ground innovation that matters in India and other emerging markets.
Okay.
They do not matter to, let's say, the US or other developed markets, because that phenomena did not happen. To give you an example, we invested in this company called Tribo, which is trying to kind of aggregate budget hotels.
Yeah.
Now, budget hotels in the US has been a fairly organized industry, and there are large players that already exist. So there was no concept of aggregating that supply.
Exactly.
That concept pretty much is an emerging market concept for countries like India, perhaps a little bit of China and so on.
Yeah.
And therefore, we feel that all the companies which now, or entrepreneurs who are now trying to build businesses on focusing on unique problems that exist to India, is in my mind the phase three of startup ecosystem, which we think we are starting to kind of see now.
Okay. And are there industries which have already seen them, or do you see that it's a cross-category phasing that you spoke about?
I think it would happen across industries. Some of the industries which obviously may become big within this phase three of startup ecosystem, agriculture could be a big one over there. Financial services, we are seeing some very unique opportunities come in financial services, which I think in certain way India would leapfrog the entire wave and move much faster than a lot of the Western counterparts and so on. So that is another area where we keep our eyes and opens for phase three type of ecosystem play in terms of startups building in that area. So I think those would be some examples. But again, you know, India as a country has so much uniqueness in terms of how we work, and number two, also a lot of problems that we have that I'm sure that you know, some entrepreneur will think of a great idea which we as venture capitalists don't even kind of think about and come and just amaze us with the kind of business and product that they've built, which suits completely for a country like India.
Got it. Without naming anyone, just out of curiosity, any recent examples that come to your mind? Something just completely blew your mind away and was truly unique? And
we are seeing a lot of stuff in the agriculture space, which is very unique.
Really nice.
Yeah.
And that is that around tech, or is that the truly agriculture?
We are looking at a lot of tech, which kind of makes agriculture much better.
Wow. Interesting.
That's one theme.
Interesting. And I've never had any investors speak about agriculture and investment category at all, ever.
I think in the next 3 to 4 years, that'll be a big theme.
Truly?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That could be a leading insight coming in from you. Thank you. It's also said, Pankaj, true to the India story, usually I've heard that, or at least I experience it every day, that India is perhaps not the market for a pure tech play.
Hmm.
And it requires a very strong balance between tech and what I call offline execution, like getting your hands dirty, like bilkul sadak pe jaake, dhoop ke andar, kaam karo. Is that what you're witnessing? Is that how it's shaping up?
Absolutely. If you look at all the e-commerce companies, a lot of the other themes, even fintech companies, etc., for e-commerce companies, tech is essentially building a lot of data, having a storefront, but everything at the back end remains exactly the same. Or quite similar, if not exactly the same.
Yeah.
So it is a lot of brute force. So as far as consumer internet companies are concerned, there is a strong offline element to the business model.
I agree.
It may not be just opening offline shops as retail shops, but there is a lot of warehousing work, logistics works, backend. I mean, there's so much that goes on. And as you kind of build your business in that space, besides having a strong tech and product, you also need to kind of build that offline piece, which is a lot of brute force. Not only that, you then have to go into multiple locations, speak different languages, go to different states and think about how to build your warehouses in different states with different laws which may be applicable to them. It's a messy business. That's where entrepreneurship is hard. That's why people who make it, they tend to have a lot more wealth, etc., because it's worth going after all of this massive work that you have to do in order to reach that level.
Got it. Yeah, that's true. Well, one thing that I wanted your opinion on is there seem to be some categories which are dominated by such large players that it almost seems to suggest that it's stupid to even enter into those. So one could argue, for example's sake, that it's pointless to start an e-commerce company in India anymore, because there are already these large players are doing and so on.
Right.
What would be, as an investor, your advice to such, let's say, remarks?
So first of all, as venture capitalists, we love to give a lot of advice, including on this podcast. But very often we come across entrepreneurs who tell us such great ideas that we get humbled and we know they are the right disruptors and we are not.
Nice.
With that caveat...
Yeah.
It is very difficult to go against the incumbents in certain categories like e-commerce, horizontal e-commerce, etc.
Yeah.
Once they get built, it's very difficult to disrupt them just by the sheer complexity of their business and the amount of capital it takes to displace them. Having said that, is the e-commerce story over? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
There are a lot of wide gaps that exist within the e-commerce space, whether it's more private labels, whether it's distributed commerce, whether it's social commerce, etc., and also e-commerce enablement as a topic, which supports these horizontal e-commerce as these players grow, I feel that there would be a lot more opportunity around e-commerce that exists. Having said that, would you start a second Flipkart or Amazon? Perhaps not.
Perhaps not. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. People think, entrepreneurs think, that when they go and approach an investor, they are the lesser ones in the equation because the investors are giving them the money. So they're almost giving them a favor and making it sound as if, bhai, agar main nahi hota, to tu kahan hota?
Correct.
And it cannot be farther away from the truth because the investors are also looking at really sharp, meaningful ideas to invest in and back them up. Please tell us how this equation is balanced and not one-sided.
So, first of all, I will say that the Indian ecosystem is relatively nascent.
Yeah.
And a lot of entrepreneurs, also the investors, have a view that perhaps we are doing a favor if we are backing people.
Yeah.
That is the wrong view.
Yeah.
Having now done venture capital within Bertelsmann for now almost 25 years, I think that's a wrong view.
Yeah.
The right view is that we are working as partners, and therefore the entrepreneurs bring exactly the same amount of, if not more, value as investors would on the table. Therefore, at least at Bertelsmann, I can kind of talk about Bertelsmann. In a 1 hour meeting, we would probably spend half an hour talking about Bertelsmann and what value we can add. And then we start, and the entrepreneur looks at us and is like, what's wrong with you guys?
You why are you selling to me?
Yeah, why are you selling to me, right? I'm the one who's kind of come to take money from you.
Yeah, I'm sold.
Right? And I thought that, you know, that is something that we should do. And I think as the ecosystem becomes more mature, more people come into the market, more success stories as entrepreneurs become popular and so on, this equation will become right.
Got it.
Is it right today? Perhaps not.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, thank you for admitting that. Okay. One last question before we close. As someone who's getting fascinated by the phase three that is now emerging, is there any specific advice to people who are not starting up, because there's enough and more out there, but people who are essentially looking at growing their business from 10 to 100? Is there something that they should watch out for that they usually don't know, is not spoken about, is rarely discussed?
I think one thing that probably entrepreneurs are starting to realize now, a lot more, the Indian entrepreneurs, is that if you look at venture capital industry taking money from investors and so on, it is probably a 8 to 10 year journey.
Okay.
It would probably be the second most important journey that you would take, barring aside getting married, right?
Yes.
So be very careful in which investors you take. Just because one investor might be giving you 10% more valuation doesn't make that particular investor better.
Yeah.
Look at what value add they can give you.
Yeah.
Look at whether that person will be available to speak to you at 10 at night or even 12 midnight when you're so worried about your business and so on.
Yeah.
Those are the skill sets that venture capitalists should bring on the table when they're partnering with you as a true partner.
Yeah.
And I think as entrepreneurs think about building these businesses, not just from zero to one, but actually taking it from 10 to 100, they should try to find as many friends as possible, because they would very quickly enter into a territory which is not known to them.
Yeah.
And there's no right answer.
Yeah.
From that perspective, would you do a TV ad and become popular, or should you spend money in digital marketing? That conflict again can kind of take days to answer, and then you have to do a lot of hit and trial and find the right strategy for yourself.
Yeah.
And therefore, having the right set of people who can kind of advise you on this would go a long way in you making less mistakes.
Yeah.
Also, at that point, when you've already made something valuable, you don't want to make mistakes.
Yeah.
When you are at zero, if you make a mistake, you'll be at zero.
Yeah.
But if you are already at 10 and you make a mistake,
you could go to zero.
You will be at zero, because there's a lick pref that the investor has put on you, right?
Yes.
So from that perspective, you know, make sure that you take the right advice, you do the right things, and hopefully your success rate would be much better.
Seek help. I think
absolutely.
Seeking help is not, unfortunately, in the culture of us.
And let me tell you this, as venture capitalists who really get excited about the journeys that most of our entrepreneurs are taking, and from that perspective, we're sitting at the backseat enjoying the entrepreneurial ride.
Yeah.
This is our way to be part of this ecosystem and help our entrepreneurs do the right thing.
Yeah.
We feel very happy if we have given the right advice and the entrepreneur has taken it, and it's a good story therefore going forward.
No, that really helps. Wonderful. And with that, we come to the end of episode 1 of Building It Up. Thank you so much, Pankaj, for all your views. For the upcoming episodes, here's what you can look forward to. Fundraising. When is the right time to raise money? How much should you raise, and who to raise from? These questions become extremely meaningful when you get to the 10 to 100 stage. Hiring. You've spent time and judiciously hired the first 50 people for your startup, but now when you have to go to 500, you perhaps will not get to meet all of them. You may not know them by name. How do you change your DNA to get that in place? Growth versus profitability, the holy grail question. How do you look at unit economics? How do you look at overall profitability? And whether it compromises growth or not, a fascinating question to delve into. This and a lot more coming up in the first season of Building It Up. You cannot afford to miss all of this. I'd encourage you to subscribe right away, and we'll see you soon with the second episode of Building It Up. This is your host, Ankur Variku, signing off. Have a good day.